This is case number 66933, and it's Rand Properties, Rand LLC et al. Versus Filippini, if I pronounce it right or incorrect. I understand there's an agreement as to how the parties are going to share time, since we're going to have multiple individuals making arguments this day. Please make sure that you identify yourself when you come to the podium. Please begin.
Thank you, and good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Carl Olson. I'm here representing appellant Rand Properties, along with my co-counsel, John Marvel. This case is primarily about fundamental doctrines of water law that are vitally important to the Nevada economy and to respecting established title to real property in the state of Nevada. By appealing the district court's rulings, Rand is not trying to change the law. Instead, what we're doing is seeking affirmance of 150 years of case precedent that needs to be re-emphasized and clarified. The district court misinterpreted these fundamental doctrines of water law and misapplied that law to reach the wrong outcome. And I should note that although this case has some very complicated facts in its background, the facts on the appeal are really largely undisputed, and the long line of case law, the precedent, is also undisputed. Everyone agrees in the briefs, as you've seen, that we have case law running back to 150 years ago that governs the outcome of this case, and the district court simply did not follow it. The case law runs to the territorial time of Nevada, and continuing from that point up to today, it has remained remarkably consistent. The case law stabilizes title to water in this state by requiring a showing of record title. That shows the conveyance and ownership of water rights throughout Nevada's history from the very first user of that right, who we call the first appropriator, initial appropriator, up to today. In this case, however, the district court made a ruling that is directly contrary to every water case in Nevada that governs the conveyance of water rights. Unless that ruling is reversed, all water rights in Nevada will become destabilized and the floodgates open to countless litigation challenging what we all thought were well-established rights. Now, I'd like to address three key issues in this appeal in which the district court simply did not follow established Nevada law. The first issue is on pre-statutory water rights, which also known as vested rights. There is well-settled precedent that a water user can change the place of use of this water right during that pre-statutory era without disturbing the priority of that water right. And this time period is prior to 1905, and that's really where everything in this case is in dispute. The district court did not follow the precedent that allows you to change the place of use, and that has resulted in the error of law. Second, and also on those pre-statutory water rights, there is another and even longer list of Nevada case precedent that requires that someone today who wants to claim a vested water right, again, a pre-1905 water right, that person today has to connect himself in interest back to that initial appropriator of water in order to claim that early priority date. This applies both to water rights for irrigation and water rights for stock water, so cattle, grazing, and so forth. The district court also did not follow this precedent, and that was also an error of law requiring reversal. Third issue is a separate set of issues only as between Rand Properties and the Tamara Ranch. Rand has bona fide purchaser defenses to two of Tamara's claims in this case. It's a claim of an unrecorded easement onto Rand's ranch and a claim of an unrecorded conveyance of what's called a certificated water right. Now, that is not a vested right. That is a water right issued later by the state of Nevada under the statutory scheme. The district court did not rule on Rand's bona fide purchaser defenses. They are a complete legal defense as a matter of law. That is also an error of law requiring reversal. There's one final issue that of attorney fees being awarded by the district court without a basis in contract, statute, or rule. And We believe that was an abuse of discretion. I'll address that if the court desires, or I will move on with the three main issues I'd like to address.
Why don't you move on? And concern of the court is whether or not the record does or does not support the ruling by the court.
I'm sorry?
Whether the record does or does not support the ruling of the lower court.
If I'm interpreting Your Honor's question correctly, the record, we believe, does not support the court's ruling in that the court made conclusions of law for which there were no facts to support it. An example of that would be the stock water that I mentioned a moment ago, where the district court found that every party in this case connected to a person in 1862 named Bradley. But because Nevada's precedent requires that you connect yourself in interest through a series of conveyances back to the first appropriator, there was no evidence to support that conclusion. There was no evidence in the record of that 1862 first appropriator ever conveying that stock water right to anybody, much less to any party in this case. Your Honor, the first issue I'd like to address on pre-statutory water rights is that the district court concluded that one of Rand Property's predecessors in the pre-statutory era could not change the place of use of his water right without restarting the priority date. Now, in other words, the district court held that if a pre-statutory water user changed the place of use of his water, he forfeited any priority date he had claimed to before that when he decided to move. When the district court reached this conclusion, it harmed Rand because it reset Rand's priority date to 1901 at the date at which its predecessor moved to the current day location of Rand's ranch. The district court's error of law led it to disregard any earlier priority date belonging to that rancher in 1901, which he obtained from his predecessors who'd used the water at other locations on the same stream. Now, the exact analysis is something in the decree that I would like to read to the court because I think it really emphasizes the issue here. The district court held there was no actual diversion and application of Trout Creek water at Rand's Trout Creek Ranch until 1901, and that was the date that Rand's predecessor moved to where Rand is today. The district court went on to hold there is no authority that would allow one prior to the enactment of statutory water law to change the place of use without creating a new appropriation and, in turn, a new priority date. That is simply an inaccurate statement of Nevada law. We cited numerous cases that recognize that in the pre-statutory era, a water user could simply relocate his place of use. And this makes sense if you think about Nevada in the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s. There's not a lot of people. There's not a lot of water as it is today. So if a rancher is going to try to grow crops and establishes 1 year further down the stream where it looks good, but the next year doesn't look so good, if he wants to move up the stream a little bit because there's better water there or better soil there, the courts recognize that that rancher can do that at that time. This line of cases is not in dispute. All of the parties have cited it in the briefs and at the lower court. There's been no case law prevailing these points. It's a very well-established line of cases that we ask this court to reaffirm and reverse the district court's ruling on. The second issue, this is also regarding a pre-statutory vested water rights. There is an even longer line of Nevada cases that requires any party claiming a vested right to show that connection and interest between the party today and that first appropriator of that vested right. The district court didn't follow this long-standing doctrine of Nevada water law when it concluded, reached conclusions for both irrigation and stock water rights in this case. There are conclusions in the decree. The parties had established priority dates that did not relate to any evidence supporting a connection is a series of deeds from one predecessor to another on through the years up until the parties today. There are breaks in what we call this chain of title. And when you have those breaks, you cannot jump past them. You don't get to claim the earlier priority date unless you can show a connection through the years. This is all relates to Nevada's water law, where we follow the doctrine of prior appropriation. This means that the rancher today has to be able to trace back for those vested rights all the way to the first appropriator that he wants to connect to establish that early priority date. The priority dates are important because if you have an earlier date, you have an earlier right. So you have a superior right to the use of that water than someone who has a later date. That's the significance of establishing these early dates. in this case, the particular ones in the record are, the district court found that 1862 Bradley stock water right attached to every party in this case with no evidence showing any conveyance from Bradley to anyone. And also, as to the Filipino respondents, the district court found that they connected to a chain started by Mr. Hughes in 1871. However, there's a six-year gap later in that chain that shows no connection. So there's a six-year break in that chain that means that the Hughes chain stopped and does not connect to the Filipino respondents. The third issue, Your Honors, this is turning now to the bona fide purchaser defenses, and has to do the dispute between Rand Properties and the Tamara Ranch, and is not related to vested water rights. The Tamara Ranch claims to have ownership of an unrecorded purchase of a water right issued by the state engineer, which is under the statutory scheme that we have today. And secondly, the Tamara Ranch claims to have an unrecorded easement onto Rand's ranch. Both of these claims are defeated by operation of law because Rand was a bona fide purchaser of its ranch in 2009, and under Nevada statutes, Rand has a complete legal defense. Rand was the first to acquire these by deed, first to record, and as far as we know today even, the only to record. So these statutes are found in NRS 533.382 and 383 as to the water conveyance. And those statutes require that a conveyance of a water right be made by deed, which only occurred to Rand in this case. The third statute is NRS 111.325 that addresses the alleged unrecorded easement. And that says that a conveyance is void against a subsequent purchaser unless you record first, which was not done here until Rand recorded. Your Honors, these mean that Rand has a complete legal defense to Tamara's claims of ownership of that easement and that certificated water right, and the district court did not address that defense at all. We believe that's reversible error. Your Honor, with the time I have remaining, Mr. McAdden represents other appellants and wished to address the court on some other issues. So unless the court has questions on what I have addressed.
We have no questions, but your time. What we'll do is we're going to give you two additional minutes for rebuttal, since you're going to wind up taking all your time, which will give counsel on the other side two additional minutes during their presentation.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Mike Mackett, and I'm here with my colleague, Robert Arteaga, who's behind the council tables. We represent John and Carrington, his wife, and John and Virginia Carrington Family Trust. And the Carrington's only reason for appearing and participating in this appeal is because it was affected by the order of the trial court when it required the Carringtons to pay 40% of the attorney's fees and costs that were paid over to the Filipino parties for commencing an action to judicially adjudicate the waters of Trout Creek in Lander County, Nevada, and 40% of the cost of the hydrographic survey that was commissioned by the court pursuant to the statute to assist it in the judicial determination. Importantly, the Carringtons were served with a summons by certified mail about 9 months after the case was, with its real controversies began. And this was pursuant to an intention on the part of the court to adjudicate the waters of that stream. NRS 533.240 requires that all parties who claim the right, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's very close to the exact words of the statute, claim the right to use the waters of the stream and the stream system of which it is a part shall be made parties. Carringtons, which own two parcels of land, one in the name of John and his wife and the other in the name of the trust, owned real property in the canyon. Carringtons claim no right to the waters of Trout Creek or to the stream system, and pursued to a stipulation that was eventually negotiated and finally filed with the court, signed by all parties appearing, the Carringtons were dismissed, which is what they had hoped to achieve, to be, not be subject, or their property be subject to the effects, unintentional effects of this, of the actions of the court. The court, nevertheless, the stipulation said, and the court, in a part of the, made the court order that the Carringtons had no property, which was subject to what the court said, to the adjudication. Nevertheless, the court required the Carringtons and each of them and treated them as equal parties to those who had the rival, the Rand parties, the Filipino parties, and the Tamara parties, treated them as equal to those who had the rival claims and the important substantial claims regarding diversions and priority rights on the Trout Creek system. The court has already heard or seen in the briefs that that there's no authority to grant attorney's fees in this case. The argument has been made that that the fees that were charged aren't actually attorney's fees but are costs. There's no authority for that. And
your interpretation of statute is it simply allows for the award of costs, which are traditional court costs and not attorney's fees.
Yeah, it just uses court costs. And if we look at the actual billing that the court referred to in the court order itself, it divides, it refers to attorney's fees and costs, but it treated them the same, it seems to me, for the purpose of the order. And the court didn't do any evaluation to determine the proportionality of what these, how these costs or fees, if they're going to be paid, should be allocated. So there's no evaluation, simply the conclusion they should be treated equally. So Carrington's treated as two parties because they had two, owned two pieces of real property in the canyon, paid 40%. Now, their issues compared to the, what is in conflict between Tamara and Rand and Filipino are negligible. But it's very significant principle to the clients that they not be treated as if they were more substantial than they are. We claim nothing and simply request the court to reverse that and allow these costs and fees to be allocated proportionate, either not charged to my clients or some analysis of proportionality which would acknowledge the negligible interests of the Carringtons, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Travis Gerber of Gerber Law Offices, Elko, Nevada, together here with my co-counsel, Zachary Gerber, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Julian Tamara Ranch's Battle Mountain Division, the Tamara Ranch, in relation to their ownership of Certificate 12160, which is a stockwater right for 600 head of cattle, the place of use being the Argeno allotment where the Tamaras also hold the grazing preference for 600 head of stock. They maintain a pipeline that crosses the Trout Creek Ranch that owns by Rand, and the troughs are located on the Argentia allotment and service the Tamara cattle. This was in existence at the time that Rand purchased the ranch. They were on actual and constructive notice and inquiry notice that this pipeline existed, that it was in actual use and possession by the Tamaras since 1989. Tamara purchased the certificate, Stockwater certificate, and rights to the Trout Creek pipeline from Horn, Rand's predecessor, in 1989. In the court case, the district court reviewed the contract documents and quieted the title, finding that, in fact, the Stockwater rights and appurtenances were transferred from Horn to Tamara. In quieting the title, the district court awarded certificate 12160 to Tamara. Also, the district court found that Tamara was the only party that could be issued that certificate because under NRS 533-503, in order for a Stockwater permit to be issued, the person receiving the certificate must be able to put it to beneficial use. This was a Stockwater permit for 600 head of cattle. Tamara is the only permittee on the Argentia allotment at the place of use that has 600 head of cattle. In fact, Horn, when he applied for this certificate, applied for it specifically to install the pipeline and install the troughs on the Argentia allotment. So the facts were obvious to the district court that this certificate was conveyed to Tamara, and Tamara was the correct owner. The only argument that Rand raises on appeal is that Rand was somehow a bona fide purchaser of this certificate. This argument was never raised as to the certificate at the district court level. There was a reference to the statute, NRS 111, that is the race notice statute for Nevada, that does say bona fide, but the bona fide argument was never asserted by Rand. They never claimed to be bona fide. It would have been laughable at the district court because the facts clearly showed that prior to Rand closing its purchase of the Trout Creek Ranch, Rand's attorneys, John Marvel, who's here today, drafted the deed and researched the title to that water certificate and found that it was not in its predecessor's deed, the Broughton to Rand.
You're saying this argument is raised first time on appeal. It wasn't raised directly or indirectly in the any of the proceedings below?
Correct. Rand never argued that it was bona fide at the trial court level. And the reason was is because there was copious evidence that Rand was on notice through its own research and through its attorneys preparing the Rand deed, that reference to certificate 12160 was not in the Broughton to Rand deed, but Rand's attorneys inserted it at closing from Broughton to Rand. Mm-hmm. So they were on notice that that was not in their chain of title, that it had previously been conveyed to Tamara. Furthermore, as I stated earlier, Rand was on actual notice that the Trout Creek pipeline crossed the ranch. Anyone standing on the ranch would see the pipeline and watch it go down into the valley where it services a series of troughs and would be on actual notice that Tamara was maintaining that pipeline to service the troughs and for its cattle. So when Rand shut off that pipeline, they did so in bad faith. They knew that that would inconvenience the Tamaras. The Tamara cattle had to trail miles to find other water, and thus this dispute was started. The district court granted an implied easement to the Tamaras to utilize that pipeline easement. It was an implied easement because Horn had conveyed the Trout Creek pipeline and appurtenances to the Tamara, and also Rand was not bona fide because they had actual inquiry and constructive notice of this pipeline crossing their land.
Counsel, I ask you the same question I asked the other side. Reading the court's order, our concern is that it is soft as to findings of fact these ultimate conclusions are based upon. What is your position as to that?
The facts that support this argument are, number one, the conveyance documents from Horn to Tamara. The documents themselves include references to Stockwater and all the pipelines, troughs, and and stock watering devices.
The court understands that, but there's a number of facts from the unrecorded conveyance to the change from, I guess it was 600 down to 30 based upon some activity. Those are the kind of facts that bother the court when it's not clear as to what the court actually relied upon, since we give great weight to what the court does in its findings to come up with these conclusions. And when it's silent and we see this record with all this in it, it creates a great pause as to what we should do.
My response to that is the district court ruling does include the facts of the Tamara or the Horn to Tamara conveyance in great detail. It cites the deed or the contract language. The district court was clear that it was quieting title. Also cites NRS 533-503, which requires that a stock water permit be put to beneficial use. Tamara is the only party that can put it to beneficial use for the 600 head of cattle that the certificate was issued for. And for Rand to claim that it was a bona fide purchaser at this stage at the Supreme Court level is in bad faith. They had actual notice prior to closing that it was not in the chain of title. It was specifically inserted into a deed prior to closing. That evidence is notice, and therefore they cannot claim that they're an innocent purchaser for value without notice. They had notice. Finally, I will argue the last point that pertains to Tamara, and that's the 1862 priority date for the stock water. As argued in our brief, the argument is that all of the current permittees on the federal allotment are in the same priority standing as the original appropriator, which was Bradley in 1862. NRS 533-503 also provides evidence that when a permittee is entitled to the forage, they're also entitled to an accompanying stock water rate. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Laura Schroeder, and I'm with co-counsel Teresa Ure. We are with the Filippini family, Dan and Eddie Ann, as well as we are representing the Filippinis as well as the Nevada Cattlemen's Association. In the courtroom with us today is the president of the Nevada Cattlemen's Association, Dave Sticks, Jr. I want to start out with Justice Douglas's questions because I think that that's where the rubber hits the road. Does the record support the ruling? And the Filipinos say that it clearly does. As to issues 1 and 2 that Rand raised, which they combined today as issue 1, suggesting that this court should take de novo review of the evidence, we say clearly no. They, in their own brief at page 29, suggest that for de novo review, the standard that they want to apply, we have to have conclusions of law and, secondly, undisputed facts. Undisputed facts. However, they spend most of their brief talking about the disputes of fact. And in today's argument, also talking about disputed facts. There are disputed facts, according to them. The court made decisions on substantial evidence regarding those facts, and the standard of review should be substantial evidence on issues 1 and 2 that Rand raises. Let me specifically talk about the issue 1 that Mr. Olson raised today, talking about the court's statement regarding the change in place of use and the recognition that invested claims, those changes in places of use cannot occur without a new appropriation. I would say that that statement in the decree is totally unnecessary given the court's other findings. The court found that Rand relied on a deed from Hoffman to Dobbs regarding water, and in that deed, the conveyance allowed so much water as necessary. There was not a specific detailed conveyance of any water right. Hoffman's held all the water rights at that time, and they could have, and did in other cases, convey certain water rights, such as Mr. Pankey's water rights, and reference them, but they did not here. And the court found that the change in place of use really didn't really matter here, because in order to have a change in place of use, you have to have something to start with. Dobbs didn't have anything to start with, except a forbearance agreement by Hoffman that they could have all the water necessary for the area that he sold them, which was the Trout Creek Ranch at the mouth of the canyon. So as to issue one, it's a red herring, as our briefs point out. Secondly, Mr. Olson talks about the stock water, and you have been briefed quite thoroughly on that issue, and we believe that that's a very important issue. In fact, we believe that this gives the court a first opportunity to decide whether or not the priority date for stock water starts from the date when cattle or stock first use the public lands for beneficial use, or, as RANs argue, that you have to have some sort of connection to private lands. As the Nevada Cattlemen's Brief points out, this would be a travesty for Nevada. Nevada, which has 82% of the lands inside of it as public lands, with 8,000 unadjudicated stock water claims, and those are not even all the ones that could be filed. Because the Taylor Grazing Act, when it adjudicated grazing on the public lands, did so by the basis of use, not by the basis of whether there were private lands attached. In fact, as we stand here today, there are many base properties that are not even close or adjacent to the use of the public lands. So trying to tie priority date to dates or transactions is very impossible to do. In fact, some base properties are not even property. We have one client whose private property interests that is constitutes its base are actually water rights on the public lands.
Is there a discrepancy in terms of what was sold, in terms of grazing preference to Tamara and what was retained by Horn?
Your Honor, I'm sorry that I did not prepare for that. Would you like Mr. Gerber to address that question for you?
I'm addressing it to you because it factors into the ultimate outcome when we talk about 600 versus 30 being retained and being sold. So it does affect the chain of title, so to speak, or the title and the priority that's given to parties. So it does factor it in. And that's why I say I'm looking at this record in this order and saying the court doesn't necessarily make clear findings as to how they got from A to C. They've left out B in some instances, and that's a concern.
Okay. Certainly, as part of the evidence that one produces in showing a stock water claim is that your permit that was issued to you under the Taylor Grazing Act. And certainly, as to the Tamaras did provide that, and the Filipinis provided that. But there is no priority date attached to that. In fact, the legislature in Nevada has provided a statute, NRS 533.490, that outlines that only beneficial use is required to establish a stock water use. There is nothing in that statute that requires a vested claimant to show a continuous title to adjacent lands. And so this, I think, is important for us to look at. The Nevada Cattlemen Association did talk about the subsistent rights and the statute there. But I think the court needs to look at where it wants to go in the future in terms of the stock water priority, because as Mr. Olson concedes, this is a very important issue for Nevada. If we're going to say that every vested claimant for stock water has to tie it to private land, we're going to be in a great difficulty, and our priority dates are going to be very late in time and may not even be within the vested time frame, because the Taylor Grazing Act was not passed until 1934. So the last issue is attorney's fees that were argued. And I think that it's important to note that this case began in June of 2011 when the Filipinos filed for the adjudication after first going to the state engineer asking them to adjudicate Trout Creek when it told us that they had no resources to do so and we should go to the court. We went to the court. Judge Wagner, in his first status conference hearing in 2012, says to the parties present, including the Carringtons and the Rands and Filipinos, that because the state engineer was not going to participate, we would have to follow a certain procedure and in order to get finality. All the parties at that time in 2012 agreed that the procedure that we should follow should be similar to the one that the state engineer does in terms of giving notice and preparing the report and so forth. And then later, that time required the Filipinos to begin to make the publication and the notice without payment, directed and ordered us to do that. We did that. Interestingly, Carringtons and Rands said nothing during the next 2 years. And Carringtons appeared at depositions, participated in discovery, and not until the second day of trial did they say, we're out of here with a stipulation. Now, when Judge Wagner assessed the cost of the state engineer's process to Carringtons, it only assessed to Carringtons that portion of the notice, did not assess the preparing of the decree or any of those costs. So we think that the court did not abuse its discretion in ordering Carrington to pay those fees. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, we'll provide you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
A couple of points that I need to respond to. First, as Mr. Gerber raised a few points, including some threshold issues that the court certainly interested in, such as whether Rand preserved some issues for appeal. One of those is whether we raise our bona fide purchaser argument at the lower court. This was addressed in the briefs. We addressed this on a reply brief at page 27 and provided citations to the record on appeal that show that we did, in fact, preserve that record or that issue. Mr. Gerber's client, Tamara, their position is belied by one crucial omission in the record here, and that is this. For both the easement that they claim and the certificated water right, they did not record that conveyance with the county recorder. The statutes I cited to your honors earlier require recording. Rand acquired that water right from its predecessor, who acquired it as an appurtenance from its predecessor, and those were recorded deeds at the county recorder as required by the statute. The same for the implied easement. An implied easement is clearly not expressed, it's not recorded, but when Rand purchased its property in 2009, it bought it without that implied easement. So those statutes provide the solution to this inquiry. As to the Filipini arguments, the description of the district court's decree and its findings as to the change of place of use as a red herring is anything but. That is the heart of the decree. That is where the district court found that Rand's predecessor could tie only to 1901 because he moved in 1901. The court made a finding of fact he moved in 1901. That's fine. But the court found that without making any findings or without recognizing the law that allowed that predecessor to connect to his predecessors and move that prior water right. And for one final point on that, Your Honors, if I may, Filippini's expert, Mr. Price, at trial, agrees with Rand. We cited this in our brief, at opening brief at page 19 to 20, the trial transcript. Mr. Price agrees that the reason that Rand's predecessor in 1901 purchased and relocated the prior water right was because the water right was valuable, and that was the entire reason for purchasing from his predecessor. We're all in agreement at that time. The predecessor could relocate his place of use. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We thank counsel for their arguments this morning. The matter is going to stand submitted. We understand, despite our present weather, the importance of water rights in the state of Nevada, going back to Mark Twain, that whiskey's for drinking and water is for fighting. With that, we stand.